Hello, and welcome to Primary Viewpoints from Patient Care Online, a monthly podcast that features informative conversations with healthcare experts, opinion leaders, and practicing physicians about what impacts primary care medicine today. I'm your host, Sydney Jennings, editor at Patient Care Online. In this episode, I sat down with Dr. Shagun Bindlish and Dr. Pamita Kapandugama to discuss obesity and type 2 diabetes. Dr. Bindlish is a board member of the American Diabetes Association and medical director at One Medical in Dublin, California. Dr. Kapandugama is the director of digital obesity at the Cleveland Clinic and former vice president and founding advisory board member at the Midwest Obesity Society.
So obesity is a major contributor to type 2 diabetes. What do each of you consider are the most important elements of the relationship between the two conditions? Dr. Kapandugama, I'll start with you and then Dr. Bindlish.
The reason that obesity and type 2 diabetes tend to go hand in hand is the concept of insulin resistance, right? So with obesity, as we tend to put on more fat tissue and fat mass, one of the primary components that happens with this is insulin resistance. So this basically means that your body is producing extra insulin because the rest of your body, your pancreas is producing extra insulin because the rest of your body is more resistant to it. And then what happens as a result of this is your pancreas tends to produce more insulin to overcome this resistance. And insulin, as we all know now, tends to be an anabolic hormone. So it tends to make you increase your weight even more. So this ends up being a self-perpetuating cycle. And that's why we see, type 2 diabetes and obesity kind of going hand in hand.
And Dr. Bindlish?
So I totally agree with Dr. Kapandugama about the insulin resistance, and that is such an important factor. And it's very important to understand the correlation between insulin resistance, how it matters for diabetes and how it matters for obesity. So not every diabetes patient can have the insulin resistance and obesity, but not every obesity patients with obesity necessarily has to have a diabetes. So, but both of them can have insulin resistance. So that's what I see very, very commonly, that people do not understand the concept and how they both are correlated with each other. And there are multiple factors that has been contributing in diabetes and obesity world, like age, stress, medications, genetics, family history. But major element I really feel that has been impacting this global epidemic is the change in lifestyle. And change in lifestyle actually can cause behavioral, psychological, environmental, all of the changes together. And this can trigger to decrease in activity and dietary non-compliance or the poor health outcome. However, we really should, usually the focus of ours is always on only the diet, like move more, eat less concept, but we are really ignoring a lot of the other important elements.
What are the most significant complications associated with obesity and type 2 diabetes that a primary care clinician is likely to encounter? Dr. Bindlish, I'll start with you.
So, Sydney, there are multiple complications that can occur with both of these diseases. They are part of the chronic diseases. But the most important, always we start with, and the risk with which we want to prevent is the cardiovascular disease. So any of the complications that are leading to cardiovascular disease, such as high blood pressure, risk of stroke or blockage in arteries, gastroesophageal reflux disease, obstructive sleep apnea, which is one of the huge challenge impacting the sleep, non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, that is the accumulation of fat in the liver, and it actually can impact every organ. Both of them together can impact every organ, but ultimately this is what we commonly see in our day-to-day practice.
And Dr. Kapandugama?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with Dr. Bindlish again. So the reason they go hand in hand is the fact that, when we get these complications of diabetes, the factors tend to get exacerbated by obesity. If you take conditions even such as neuropathy, right? It's a very common thing to say neuropathy with type 2 diabetes. And if you have, that extra weight on, you also have compression of your nerves. People talk to me about what they term as healthy obesity. But I always tell them, just because you don't have the metabolic complications of having that extra weight on does not mean that you're not going to be prone to things like arthritis, things like urinary incontinence, which can go with, conditions like diabetic nephropathy, diabetic neuropathy. So you know, having that extra weight on tends to complicate matters. And so that's why it's important that when we talk to these patients, we take kind of a whole body approach and explain to them that, you know, having that extra weight while you're a diabetic also exacerbates your complications. And then you should be kind of attacking both of them at the same time and early so that we can actually make sure we get things more in control.
So how should clinicians treat patients with obesity and type 2 diabetes? Dr. Kapandugama, I'll start with you.
Yeah, so I think it's very important that when you know, a healthcare provider identifies a patient with both type 2 diabetes and with obesity or being overweight, that they manage the both conditions simultaneously and straight away. So, you know, with type 2 diabetes, there's multiple trials in the past that showed that early intervention tends to prevent a lot of the complications. And we are going to find out more and more, even if we haven't already, there'll be much more studies coming out that it's very important to get weight management interventions in as early as possible. You know, I think one of the questions that people always ask is, you know, what about diet and exercise? Absolutely. If you look at the algorithms for both, you know, type 2 diabetes and obesity, they are actually the same intervention, which is diet and exercise. So, you know, it's up to us as healthcare providers to make sure that diet and exercise is the first modality we use in both patients, which also, again, makes it kind of a little bit easier for providers that we go ahead and, you know, start this straight away as soon as we identify the patients who have this. And that way it gets started on this process faster. And also then, you know, by the time they come for the next visit, we can talk to them about other modalities, whether it be medications or, you know, surgery or anything. But at that first visit, when you see these patients with both type 2 diabetes or needing weight management, that they kind of focus on it straight away.
Primary care clinicians treat the majority of patients with type 2 diabetes in the U.S. and are also typically the first healthcare professionals to approach management of overweight and obesity. Based on your experience with both diseases, would you leave our primary care audience with three suggestions on managing patients with both? Dr. Bindlish, I'll start with you.
So I think this is such a wonderful question, and answer is also very long, but I have put it in short, easy words that our audience can remember. And just to remember, like A, B, C. So A stands for assess and avoid judgment and assumption. There is a lot of weight bias related issue. There is a lot of stigma, and it is not only with weight, it also is with the patient living with diabetes. And it's very important to use the people's first language and understand the emotions. So always avoiding the judgment, avoiding and assuming any of those assumptions that we all have made for so many years is very important, because when patient comes to your clinic, they have already tried so many times, and about especially with the weight. So they definitely don't like to hear that over again, and that can cause a loss of hope. B is a barrier and behavior. Always address all the barriers. What are the challenging factors in the lifestyle? And understand behavior, even like sleep and mental health, is very, very important. It's like six pillars of the lifestyle medicine that we always talk about. Mm-hmm. And we very commonly ignore sleep and mental health. So everything go hand in hand. So having a holistic approach is very important. And C is all about C, actually. Ultimate goal of all the discussion and preventing this pandemic is to improve the cardiovascular risk factor. So this global reduction of cardiovascular disease can happen actually by coming out of your comfort zone and managing the complex lifestyle in the better way and understanding it in the better way. And the most important is the taking action on time.
And Dr. Kapandugama.
Yeah, no, I think Dr. Bindlish really hit the nail on the head, you know. I think early, so if I was to, you know, tell them, you know, the primary care providers three things, you know, definitely no judgment, because, you know, the assumption for many, many years was the fact that people are eating too much and not working out enough. There has been multiple studies now and multiple pathways that have shown that's not the case. There's also, you know, questions about, oh, we did not have these problems back in the 50s. Why do we have it now? It's because, again, people eat too much. But again, there's a lot of socioeconomic stresses that people don't think about. You know, right now, you know, people say we should be eating more at home and not eating from out. but how many homes we know where both the parents now have to go to work. And so, you know, it's, you have to still make sure that your family is fed. So, you know, there's a lot of things that kind of play a role in this. So I think a judgment-free zone is very important. The second very important point, again, that she mentioned and I agree with is early intervention. Early intervention is, you know, very important. I think as more providers understand that when a patient comes to you, it's not that they're coming to see you because they're in a good place. They're probably, you know, already struggled with this for a while. So getting that initial history from the patient will tell you what they've tried before. And then you can start early intervention with, you know, healthcare provider directed lifestyle changes at that first visit itself. And like I mentioned, that is also a treatment. People assume medications are the treatment. It's not. Talking to them initially and getting them started on that diet and exercise pathway before moving to medications or surgery or whichever modality you use, it's important that that conversation happens at the initial visit. The last thing I would say is actually the residents ask me all the time, you know, that a primary care visit is very long. There's a lot of things that I'm sure Dr. Bainlish will tell you. There's a lot of things that the primary care doctors have to do. They have to deal with pain. They have to do with referrals for other chronic conditions, other than chronic conditions like, you know, obesity and type 2 diabetes. So what I tell the residents is what I would tell everyone, what I tell my own patients, which is to lose weight, we usually have to do a calorie deficit or a deficit in the energy intake. But to maintain our weight loss, it's exercise. There are some people, unfortunately, who come to us who say that, oh, I'm working out as much as I can and I'm not losing weight. The truth of the matter is the studies show that to lose weight with exercise, we have to exercise about 3-4 hours a day. I'm pretty sure everybody on this call doesn't have 3-4 hours a day. I do have some professional athletes who come to me for weight loss who do have the time, but most people do not. So, you know, we try to drive home, you know, what we see in the guidelines and what the studies show, which is none of the diets work in 2 years without exercise added, but also that exercise is to maintain the weight loss while we, you know, help with the diet to actually start the weight loss going. So it's important to also educate our patients about that's why these things are not working. And then just, you know, just a small plug for exercise. The recurrent recommendations for exercise is to get 150 minutes of exercise a week to maintain your weight loss. It does not matter how that is split. People assume it's half an hour, 5 days a week, and they don't want to do it because they don't have the time for it, or they can't do it because they don't have the time for it. But what we have found is that it does not matter how it's split. So if you want to do 1 hour, 3 days a week, that's 180 minutes. Or most people, if they're off on Saturday, Sunday, when you do go out and get some exercise, go for walks, you know, go to your YMCA, you know, go to, you know, your gym, try to get in that extra little bit of time. So try to carve out that time in your weekly schedule, 1.5 hours on Saturday, Sunday, or 1 hour, 3 days a week. As long as you hit that 150, that journey that you're doing to get your weight down, not only are you going to be able to get that weight down with your dietary plans or medications or whatever to reduce your calorie deficit, but that exercise is going to help you maintain your weight loss.